Welcome to the Soft Verbal Podcast, presented by Dead Soxy, hosted by RebelGrove.com publisher Neil McCready, and featuring RebelGrove.com and Rivals.com recruiting analyst Russell Johnson.
Awesome!
The Soft Verbal Podcast is your number one podcast dedicated to Ole Miss football and basketball recruiting.
Caution, you are about to enter the no-spin zone.
Featuring guests from throughout the Rivals.com network, the Soft Verbal Podcast tells you what is happening and what's going to happen on the recruiting trail, and it does it in style. Just like Dead Soxy.
I'm better looking than you.
Visit DeadSoxy.com and enter Rebel Grove at checkout for 25% off your order of the best dress socks you'll ever wear. Now here's your host, Neil McCready.
Welcome into the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Dead Soxy. I'm Neil McCready. Russell Johnson of Rivals.com, RebelGrove.com will join us momentarily, and we will start talking 2020 recruiting. Hard to believe that it happens that quickly, but that is how it works. We'll get to that in a minute, but first let me tell you about Dead Soxy. So warm weather is on the horizon, and with it comes the inevitable debate of sock or no sock with your loafers. So save your feet and your shoes from making their own impression. Step into spring with some no-shows from Dead Soxy. You really need to experience the difference a quality sock makes. This is the first step in dressing for the job you want and not the job you have. Go to DeadSoxy.com. Enter the code RebelGrove at checkout to receive 30% off all orders, including sale items. These no-shows are the same quality you already love and enjoy with Dead Soxy's traditional dress socks, and again, they come with Dead Soxy's no-slip guarantee. So go to DeadSoxy.com, check out their no-show collection, and remember to enter promo code RebelGrove at checkout for 30% off all orders. DeadSoxy.com. I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number. Call the number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. It's right to the bottom line. There's no haggling, no hassle. And what you get is you get a quote, and then it's up to you. You can shop that quote around, make sure that you're getting a deal that you're going to be happy with, or you're going to end up doing the smart thing. I've done this a few times now, and that's you go to Corey, and you get the quote. You realize it's the best quote, and you take – you get your car purchase done, your truck purchase done, so easy, so quick, with great people, great service. Corey wants to be your car guy. He wants to be your truck guy, and he'll prove it to you. Clark Ford, 662-257-1900. Tell Corey at the end of your deal that you heard about Clark Ford on the Soft Verbal Podcast, and you'll save $500 off the already great bottom line. Again, that number, 662-257-1900. Russell, how are you, sir?
Doing good. This is the time of year where everything's kind of, I wouldn't say in flux, but there's a lot happening, especially, you know, tonight. But today the NBA is returning. There's some Europa League soccer on. The 2020 kids are elevating. Spring training, they tried to start playing baseball today. Didn't end up actually being able to play more than, I think, two innings. There's just a lot going on this time of year.
Apparently it's raining in Mississippi and Arizona to the point that no one can play baseball. But yeah, it is that odd kind of time of year where I got asked today. In fact, I took Carson to get his hair cut, and Regina, the lady who cuts Carson's hair, said, "I guess this is kind of your slow time." And I said, "No, not really. This is kind of a weird, sneaky, busy time because you have basketball coming down the stretch, and I'm covering a team that is very much in the NCAA tournament picture. And you have baseball getting started. And while I don't cover baseball for RebelGrove.com, I do have to keep up with it enough to talk about it on the podcast and not just completely leave Chase hung out to dry. And then you have spring football, which starts Tuesday, and it'll start with what appears to be at least a somewhat incomplete coaching staff. We'll talk about that a little bit in a minute. But my point is, no, it's kind of a busy time. For me, it's real busy until right after the Grove Bowl, and then it kind of dies a little bit, although there is the month of April. There's lots of recruiting, and there's a lot going on. So it doesn't ever really completely just stop. You know what I mean? There's like a a little time in July, right before everything starts up, where it's usually pretty dead, like from the end of the baseball season, although now you have the camps and stuff, but you have just a little bit of dead time, but it never really dies the way people think that it probably would.
No, it doesn't. And I think that's kind of the evolution of college athletics and really this business in general, because so much has changed in terms of even just the recruiting calendar being pushed up so much to where starting in a little over a month, recruits can start taking official visits. And that's still something that I don't see Ole Miss doing, but several other schools, especially ones that Ole Miss is going up against for recruits, are going to use.
Okay, so let me do this. Before we get started on recruiting, let me tell you guys, Russell, I was going to forget otherwise. Saturday is Funky's 10-year anniversary. Funky's has been great to the MPW Digital Network. We host our Thursday night show in football season. We actually host our Friday show on Thursday night live there at Funky's. This is the 10-year anniversary of Funky's. They're going to have crawfish at 1:30. They'll have Rebel Baseball and Hoops on. And then it's Oldies Night at 7 p.m. They'll be giving away drinks and pizza and gift certificates all day long. That's at Funky's on the Square. So check them out if you're in town on Saturday. You want to go watch Ole Miss baseball on TV. Ole Miss is at Tulane. The men's team plays Georgia at 2:30 at the Pavilion. So a lot going on, and make Funky's a part of your day. Saturday is the 10-year anniversary there at Funky's. All right, Russ, let's talk about some of the topics that, are on people's minds as we start talking about 2020 first. And you make this pretty quick, but just your final, now that it's done, your sort of final look at the 2019 class.
Well, I mean, you can't start talking about the 2019 class any other way than the way they were able to close on four-star JUCO linebacker Lakia Henry. Henry was thought to be going to Arkansas, and I still take, even though I did change my future cast a couple hours before he announced, I still take that as a loss. And I fully expected him to go to Arkansas, waking up on Wednesday morning. Even as I was eating lunch on National Signing Day, I thought he was going to Arkansas. And for Ole Miss to be able to pull that off, that was big. And then, other than that, being able to re-get Jerrion Ealy, I mean, it was expected, but it was still big. And now they've kind of got to, I wouldn't say re-recruit him, but they have to try to figure out a way to be able to get him on campus, I guess is the way to put it. Between them, the baseball staff, and the potential, I don't know exactly what you would call it, injury insurance, basically. Those three things are going to be critical in determining whether or not Ealy ever shows up on campus. And then, getting Mingo to not flip to state. And he didn't even have any drama at his presser. He showed up in an Ole Miss polo, and that was that. People were kind of a little bit worried that he was going to rip it off and have some type of Hail State shirt on or something, which I thought was kind of funny. But that there was really no drama there. And then, like I said, Henry was really the biggest get, especially from a position need standpoint in the 2019 class. And getting to Henry and talking a little bit further about him, I mean, you can't mention his relationship. You talk about him without mentioning his relationship with John Sumrall. And John Sumrall had a really, really good relationship with both him and the mother. And there began to be some tinfoil hat people talking on message boards and on social media about the possibility of Henry getting out of his letter of intent and either going elsewhere or going to Kentucky with Sumrall. And I can tell you for a fact that that is not what's going to happen, and that Henry is still fully committed to, being in Oxford and being at Ole Miss.
What is there's a lot of talk this week about John Sumrall. Obviously he left Ole Miss for Kentucky. I know that he certainly has the reputation as one of the better recruiters on that staff. I know he was playing a big role in what they were able to achieve in Alabama, and was playing a big role in what they were hoping to achieve and still are hoping to achieve in Memphis. What is the impact of losing John Sumrall at this stage?
You said, what is the impact?
Yeah, what's the impact for Ole Miss of losing John Sumrall today?
Today, it's pretty big. And then as things progress and as things, as they, I wouldn't say hire a replacement, hire somebody to take a spot on the staff, that's where you would have to see just how big of an impact it's going to be. I mean, Sumrall was in Memphis for a little over a month, maybe 2 months. I mean, he had known he was going to take over Memphis, but it wasn't public knowledge. So, I mean, he was working on building relationships through back channels and through other ways. And then his relationships in Mobile and in the state of Alabama and even in Louisiana, where he had two commitments who ended up getting dropped in Tyler Judson and Caleb Etienne. Those are three states where Ole Miss is going to have to sign players in the class of 2019. You're not going to be able to get away with not signing anybody from Alabama. You can't go 2 years in a row without signing a kid from Louisiana. It's just not going to happen, especially with the – we'll get to it a little bit later, but the class of 2020 and the amount of talent that there is or may not be.
All right, so – What is next in Mobile? Because I know he was big in Mobile, he was big in Memphis, he was recruiting Louisiana. What do you anticipate Ole Miss doing with those territories?
I expect Memphis to go to Charles Clark. I'm not sure. I wouldn't say that's for sure yet. I'm just kind of a projection based off of his personality and the way that he was already in Memphis when he was recruiting Maurice Hampton and a couple other kids up there for last year and even into early 2020 when they were doing the January evaluation period. And then in Mobile, that's where you kind of have a situation because Sumrall had the best relationships and the only other viable option you have is Freddie Roach. But Freddie Roach already has so many territories that if you were to give Freddie Roach Mobile, you would, number one, be taking something away from him, and then you'd have to take something away from somebody else, and it kind of starts a domino effect. So with that one, that's going to be really interesting to see. And then in Louisiana, I don't think that's going to be too much of a problem because I see them giving that to the new tight ends coach, Calvin McGee. And his relationships in New Orleans and the ability he's had there in the past is something that they're hopeful he can kind of rekindle. I mean, you're not going to get too many high four-star or even high-caliber kids at the University of Arizona, but he's had relationships in New Orleans, and they're hoping that he can kind of, you know, start those back up. And they're kind of hoping also that while he was at Arizona and while he was at other places, he wasn't, you know, cutting them off and not talking to them. They're hoping he was a consistent communicator, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and, you know, he's had success getting Louisiana kids to different places and getting them, like you said, getting them to Oxford would be easier than getting them all the way out to Tucson because it's forever out there. I mean, you go to the middle of nowhere and then go 2 hours south.
Exactly.
All right, so it is that time of year that guys start I guess for lack of a better term, Russell, they kind of start to blow up as prospects. I mean, guys that, you know, were not heavily thought of as prospects maybe a year ago, suddenly they've grown into their bodies, that kind of thing, and now they're just taking off. Is this the kind of these next couple 3 months or when you really watch to see who blossoms as an elite prospect?
It is, and it's also that time of year where it's very difficult to decipher, and this is where, you know, relationships and conversations and constant connections really help kind of determine which is a camp offer and which is a committable offer, because you've got so many offers going out left and right that it's hard to kind of keep up. But it's also that time of year where you get kids who may have been extremely humble and just say they're blessed for every offer and even, you know, putting Bible verses in their offer tweets and all that kind of stuff. And then you kind of get down to this part of the year where they're going on junior day visits and they just start to fall in love with the process. And you see them start to answer their phone a little bit less. You see their parents start to talk a little bit differently. You see other people get involved in their recruitment who may not have been in the past. It's an interesting time of year. Number one, for relationships. Number two, like I said, with the committable and non-committable offers, and also, like I said, for the junior day visits. And and being able to figure out who's actually they're interested in that they're bringing on a visit and who they're bringing on a visit just because they have a elite prospect who is a brother, cousin, a nephew or something like that. Those are the things that you have to decipher this time of year. But like I said, the most important, the biggest thing that happens this time of year is where these kids start to fall in love with the process. I've learned that rather quickly covering the state of Mississippi.
So you're saying this is the time of the year that some family rifts get settled. An uncle comes back and says, you know, I always loved you. Now I really want to be a part of your life.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. That's exactly what happens. And, yeah, people are searching. There are plenty of family members searching the Yellow Pages for some numbers.
All right. Let's talk about some guys. Tell me about I'm just going to throw some names at you. Eli Acker.
Eli Acker is probably right now the most underrated player in the state of Mississippi for the class of 2020. He also happens to be the only current 2020 commit for Ole Miss. But I've watched him. I've watched him in person. I saw him camp. He has the look of a future NFL offensive lineman, especially as he fills out more and more. I first saw him work out. He was working out at tight end. And you can kind of see that he was never in his life going to be quick enough to play tight end, but you could still see enough, not quickness, but enough of a first step off the ball to where you could see that he was going to be able to probably play tackle. With Acker, he's been to Notre Dame. He's going to have these big schools come after him, especially once he goes on these junior day visits and as schools begin to watch film. Once the spring evaluation period takes place, there will be several schools in Park Lane, Mississippi, looking at Eli.
A guy that I've seen play a lot because he's a classmate of my daughter's is J.J. Pegues at Oxford. They kind of play him everywhere, you know, tight end, running back, almost a wildcat quarterback. I mean, he kind of does a little bit of everything. What does he play at the college level, and then what's going on with his recruiting?
Where he plays at the college level, that is the question and people in Lafayette County are going to be asking for the next probably, 10 months, 9 months, until December or February, whenever he decides to sign, because it's so up for debate where he's going to play. Between tight end, where he's at now, he could very easily grow into an offensive lineman, which he does not want to do, or he could end up on the defensive line, which is where I actually would project him as, since you're asking me today. And then the thing with his recruitment that's kind of gotten me kind of confused, not confused, I guess, but it's kind of the next topic I want to get into as well, is his dream school this whole time was not Ole Miss. His dream school, ever since he was a freshman or sophomore, since I first started talking to him, has been the University of Alabama. And he's always said, you know, unless Alabama offers, I'm going to Ole Miss. And needless to say, last weekend, Alabama offered while he was on campus, which probably means that's a committable offer, which is something that he was waiting for.
So you wanted me to ask you this, and it is a great question. Why isn't, for a kid like that, why isn't Ole Miss the dream school?
I've been trying to figure it out. It's kind of something that I don't see. You know, you see in the state of Ohio, kids want to go to Ohio State. You see in the state of Louisiana, kids want to go to LSU. You see in the state of Tennessee, kids want to go to Tennessee. You see this in the state of Arkansas, most kids want to go to Arkansas. But in the state of Mississippi, because there's, I guess, two in-state schools, you would think that one of those two would be the dream school, and it's not. And I don't know if it's because these kids were growing up at a time where neither school was dominant, or if it's just because Alabama was winning national championship after national championship, and the media covers Alabama almost as heavily as they do Zion Williamson currently. And that's just – I don't know. That's something I've been trying to figure out literally since I started covering Ole Miss recruiting, because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. Because when you get to – I would say south of Jackson, that's where you get everybody's dream school with LSU. And you get north of Jackson, almost everybody's dream school is Alabama. And if Ole Miss loses Brandon Turnage and J.J. Pegues in consecutive years, That's unacceptable.
What is your early prediction on Pegues?
I've had my future cast in on him for Ole Miss for several months now, so I really can't change that currently. But if you see him head over to Alabama a couple more times without committing, Ole Miss has been trying to get him to commit, almost basically trying to get him to commit to Ole Miss before going to Alabama, because they probably knew the Alabama offer was coming. So I would say that's going to be a neck and neck battle. I don't see him, you know, making some crazy early commitment like many wanted him to, but it seems as if he's definitely not done with the process yet.
He's one hell of a high school player. I mean, he plays just kind of all over the place. All right. What about?
Yeah, he carried Oxford into the high school to the playoffs last year. I mean,
yeah,
I expected them to win maybe two or three games, and Pegues was. I mean, he played quarterback, he played running back, he played tight end,
yeah,
he played receiver.
Everything.
He was everywhere.
Yeah, he did everything. Yeah, and seems like a great kid too. What about EJ Mason?
So EJ Mason is the wide receiver who was at Jackson Academy with. Now Ole Miss quarterback Kincaid Dent, transferred to Clinton, and I think he's still at Clinton. I'm not sure if he's going to transfer again or what's going to happen there, but he decommitted from Mississippi State, and a lot of people are asking me if Ole Miss was going to actively pursue him or was going to offer him or anything of that nature, and I can flat out tell you that that's not going to happen.
What about Jabari Small? And I know that he's one of the kind of a handful of legacy offers that are either out there or about to be out there. What's the latest with him and legacies in general?
So with legacy offers, I think that's kind of where you have to figure out the timing standpoint of an offer. If you do it too early, you may look desperate. If you do it too late, it might be too late. You got to find this happy medium in between the two, because you know almost for a fact the moment that you tell him, hey, you know, we want to offer you a scholarship to come play for the University of Mississippi, he's probably going to say, I'm in. And the moment you do that, you can't drop him. You can't drop him no matter whether you get his four-star defensive lineman teammate or not. No matter what happens the rest of his senior season, you cannot drop him. And that's something that has probably created some hesitation on Small's offer. I mean, he doesn't have an offer yet. And I would say that, and the fact that, you know, you kind of have to find a place for him on the field. I mean, he's played running back, he's played receiver. I'm not sure if he's fast enough to play running back, so he might end up on defense. I mean, he's an athlete, an SEC caliber athlete. He's got Arkansas, UNC. I mean, he's got several Power Five offers. It's just a matter of finding a place for him in the class and finding a spot for him on the field. And he's not someone you want to build your recruiting class around. His teammate and probably package deal, Amari Thomas, the defensive lineman from Briarcrest as well, he is someone you could build your class around, especially landing him from the city of Memphis and getting that kind of started. Those two would be something you could build a recruiting class around, but you don't want to build on a three-star athlete. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a big class. It's an important class. It's a full class. It's the first class where the whole NCAA thing's not even a topic. It's got to be a deep class. Do you have not specifically breaking it down, but do you have kind of a feel for if everything went the way they want it to go, sort of how it would break out from a position standpoint?
Well, yeah, I can kind of give somewhat of a breakdown. I mean, the first things first, and I know this is going to probably be a little bit of a surprise to some, but you take a quarterback every year.
Absolutely.
No matter what.
Absolutely.
And they're not going to get Jack Miller, the kid from Arizona who they were on for years. Sister goes to Ole Miss, and Ole Miss fans are going to dream about that one until he signs with Ohio State. At running back, I just see them taking one, maybe two. That depends on whether or not Ely shows up. Wide receiver isn't going to be that much of a need next year. I don't see Braylon Sanders declaring for the NFL draft or anything like that. So you probably take one or two there. They're going to have to take at least two tight ends after missing out on tight end targets the past 2 years. I would say in the class of 2018, they actually missed on Glenn Beal. But for the class of 2019, the only real miss I could see at the position there would have been Jalen Werdemeyer, who spent, I think, 4 days on campus in the summer. And they were trying to get him to commit. A&M kind of held him off, and then A&M ended up signing him. So I would call him the big 2019 miss at tight end. So, yeah, they're going to have to take some at tight end. Offensive line is still in need, even though they signed over a half dozen last year. So being able to get maybe three or four there. And then the only other real big need that you know they're going to have to take is safeties. Safety is already thin. They're hoping that Cam White can get his grades as necessary to be able to leave Northwest in July and he would still be a member of the 2020 class, kind of like Tarekius Tisdale was in the 2019 class. And being able to have him would probably drop that number down to three safeties. But right now I see them adding four in the class. And then the other thing, I kind of talked about this a little bit. I did a quick Ask Me Anything while I was waiting for Emory today. And they have to start to recruit outside linebackers whose natural position is outside linebacker. You're switching to a 3-4, and you don't need to be signing players any further that you need to convert to outside linebacker. You watch a kid on film, you watch a kid in camp, he needs to be an outside linebacker. And I see them signing two or three of those, because you're going to need them. As much as you'd love to see, Jonathan Hess, Kevontae Ruggs, but possibly a couple converted defensive linemen excel at that position, it's not overly likely. So you have to kind of be prepared. But I don't see them signing 25 in this class. I see it being less than that.
They've already gotten a commitment for 2021, wide receiver. How does that impact another 2021 wide receiver, Deion Smith?
So Deion Smith and Brandon Buchalter, the interesting story here, and it's really, even if Buchalter hadn't committed to Ole Miss, it's Ole Miss related because of their offensive coordinator at Provide, Shea Hodge. So Hodge and Smith had been building a relationship ever since Hodge took the job there. And Smith had really began to develop, and a lot of schools love him. He's added Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and LSU just in the past 20, maybe 30 hours. He's added offers from all three of those schools, and I think there's more coming. I know for a fact there's going to be more coming. And Buchalter, he was at Callaway at first. Deion Sanders saw enough of him at a Future 50 camp, got him to transfer to his high school in Texas. Buchalter ended up leaving there and going to Provine, becoming eligible through the MHSAA, which was a modern miracle. And then now he's leaving there again to go play for Callaway. Deion had a really, really has a really strong relationship with Hodge. And I think Brandon kind of saw that and maybe felt he wasn't going to be the first option. And then a lot of kids, when it comes to being set in their ways, when things get like that, in terms of being comfortable, they'd rather be comfortable than be challenged.
Okay, let's see. Let's talk about I don't know how detailed you want to go in with these guys, because there's a lot of time between now and December, but the rise of DeSoto County. It was a part of the state that I know you spent a lot of time in. You've built a lot of connections in, a lot of contacts. These big schools like South Haven and Horn Lake and Olive Branch, those kind of schools that they just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Are they going to start producing kind of the D1 SEC prospects that Ole Miss can make a pipeline to?
It seems as if DeSoto County has overtaken Jackson. And I know that's a bold statement, especially for, just 2 years, but last year you had Jerrion Jones, you had a couple in Jackson last year, but it seemed as if DeSoto County is really getting going. I mean, South Haven of all schools. I mean, they win three or four games a year, but they've got two potential SEC players on their roster in Khalil Benson, the offensive tackle who Ole Miss offered in this past week, and their cornerback, Caleb Offord, who I've seen grow from a 5'11 corner who doesn't know what he's doing to a press coverage corner who's got Power 5 ability. And, I mean, his first offer was Duke and kind of took everybody by surprise. He was a kid from South Haven. Getting his first offer from Duke was kind of a little bit weird. But that was his first real junior day visit. And ever since then, I think every school he's visited other than Ole Miss has offered. So that's a streak he's trying to keep going. Ole Miss could offer him eventually. They've got some other targets, other irons in the fire, I guess you could say, at cornerback, and they want to see what happens there. Horn Lake, you know, Horn Lake's a little bit of a sore topic with Ole Miss fans right now, seeing as they missed on both Radarius Jones and N'Kobe Dean. If Chase needs to, he can edit that part out. But Josiah Hayes, Dekevian Brown, and Deion Biggins all have SEC caliber talent. Now, Biggins, you still got to figure out whether or not he's going to be able to qualify. Jack Brown, the linebacker, outside linebacker, I was just talking about the importance of recruiting an outside linebacker. That's exactly where I could see Jack Brown excelling. Josiah Hayes, being a 3-4 defensive tackle, is something that I could see him fitting very well into. But the thing with Hayes, and this is going to probably piss some people off, is Georgia is the school to watch there. Georgia was able to build a ton of relationships at Horn Lake, and Hayes is known to want to win, and he's known to be very close with N'Kobe. So Georgia's the school to watch with Josiah. I still give Ole Miss the slight edge right now, but there's a ton of other schools. And then, like I said, with Biggins being a little bit at risk to not qualify right now, his recruitment's kind of on hold. And then at Olive Branch, you know, Olive Branch put out two SEC kids 2 years ago, a couple group of five kids this past year. So Xavier Hill, who added offers from Alabama, LSU, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, basically every offer that the normal Mississippi kid who's highly touted receives, he's got. And then the last real surprise school, I guess you could call it, is Lewisburg, who last year put out Hakeem Vance before he moved to Hattiesburg his senior year. Cameron Threet, the cornerback prospect, is about 6 foot, 5'11", depending on the day, depending on who's measuring him. And with him, Mississippi State offered and is currently his only SEC offer. And he's another one, kind of like Deion Biggins, who's got some great issues.
In all, if you had to guess, how many Mississippi kids are SEC caliber in this class?
17.
Okay. So obviously, with that happening, you've got to have some secondary pipelines. What are some places to look for if you're an Ole Miss fan? Where are some secondary pipeline opportunities for this class?
They're going to have to continue to use the state of Alabama, especially with their recruiting class. The amount of talent in the state of Alabama is just is something that they really have a chance to capitalize on. And then the state of Louisiana as well, possibly Texas, though I don't see it being too likely. And then Charles Clark getting into Florida would be big as well.
All right, last thing, and I appreciate you kind of gutting through what's been a sick week for you and your family up there. Spring ball gets started. We'll talk a lot about the importance of spring ball for a football team. In terms of recruiting, how important is spring football?
It's big for the visitors, especially with a new offensive and defensive coordinator. It's important for the kids to be able to see kind of what the offense is going to look like, even though they're only really getting just the skeleton of it. Being able to see, you know, what the quarterback's going to be responsible for, what the route tree looks like under a legit offensive coordinator and seeing what the 3-4 defense looks like, and really for the coaches to see just how big of a need certain positions are going to be in the 3-4 defense, seeing how big of a position of need the running back and tight end is going to be in the Rich Rodriguez offense. Being able to see those things is important for recruiting. But from your standpoint, I get where you're talking about how kind of pointless spring ball is.
No, I didn't say pointless. What it is for me from a spring standpoint is when people say that it's going to be revelatory of what a team's going to be. And I've never really believed that, especially when you have a spring where it's mostly installation. It's about learning. It's about getting comfortable. It's about all of those things. In my opinion, you're not going to answer all of your questions or even come close to answering your questions in the spring. It's going to be about installing. You're going to have to reinstall over the summer. Where I think spring has changed, and I do believe this firmly, and I've talked to a lot of coaches, and they all say the same thing. They're all kind of afraid to say it publicly. I think if you left it up to college coaches, with some exceptions, it would be much more like an NFL minicamp. It would be much more learning. There would be less temptation to have scrimmages and all of that stuff. There'd be more learning, more installing, because the kids come in June and they basically practice all summer. So you do a lot of installation in the summer as well. You want guys healthy. The offseason's more important. They're in your program. The offseason program continues. As soon as this is over, they go right back into another stretch of offseason. You don't want guys hurt where they can't lift and get bigger and stronger and stuff in the month of April and May. I just think when people put a tremendous emphasis on spring football, as when people used to say, well, that's when you make your team. I don't believe that anymore. I think your team starts getting made in the summer, not in the spring. That's all my point is. And I mean, people that disagree with it, I'm cool with it. I understand why they disagree. I just think that's an old school thought that, people have these scrimmages, and you and I both know this. Every team that has a red and blue game or maroon and white game or a purple and gold game or whatever, all of the coaches are thinking, how can we get through this without getting anybody hurt? That's their big thing. Let's not get anybody hurt. Let's get out of this and into the next phase, because those next – I mean, Ole Miss finishes on what, August? I mean, April the 8th, and they don't play
– Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
They play, you know, basically the last weekend of August. So that's 4.5 months. Your season's made in those 4.5 months. You don't want to lose people where they can't participate in those 4.5 months and get bigger and stronger and all those things, because that's when games are decided. That's just my opinion. And it's one that a lot of coaches have shared privately, and then the season rolls around, the spring rolls around, and they just kind of feel compelled to do it. And they just hold their – they just kind of cross their fingers and hold their breath and hope nobody gets hurt. Well, hey.
Yeah, there might be some T's and I's dotted that may – be helping them make that decision. I know last year during the spring game at Ole Miss, I mean, it was kind of a blessing and a curse, the weather. It was terrible for the Grove Bowl last year.
So cold.
And Luke ended the spring game. I wouldn't say he ended it early. It ended before the TV allotment was up. So he was doing that drills. And it was quite a topic on the message board. And I mean, I thought it was smart, because you're highly unlikely to get anybody injured in mat drills as you are in an actual scrimmage.
Yeah, if it weren't for the TV, they wouldn't have even had one last year. I think they're getting phased. I think spring football games and stuff, unless you can do something productive with it where you can put something on film and learn from it, I don't know. It's something we'll talk about as it gets going. We're covered a lot at rebelgrove.com. We'll be out there when media's available and stuff. So the people that think that that's going to impact what we do, it's not. We're going to still cover it. We're going to bring you the stories. It's going to be a lot of heavy installation this year is my anticipation. And then the parts of the spring that are open to the TV cameras, man, they're not going to show you anything. It's going to be absolute vanilla. So, Well, hey, Russell, get well, get your family well, and we'll visit again next week with another edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Dead Soxie. Don't forget, go to deadsoxie.com, enter promo code Rebel Grove at checkout for 30% off all orders, including the no-show collection and sale items. So for Russell Johnson, I'm Neil McCready. That does it for this edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Dead Soxie. Until next week, take care.